Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Constant Keane of the band Mail. The Irish trio is based in Dublin, Belfast, and London, and their latest album, Something Soft, is out May 16th via Merge Records. In this conversation, Keane discusses the origins of the band, as she had enough faith in the music she was part of to book a headlining tour, hire a publicist, and essentially act like Mail was an almost veteran entity, even in the band's earliest days. She also discusses sexism and misogyny in musical communities and the bonds she shares with bandmates Jamie Hyland and Sean Nolan. That's Constance Keane of Mail coming up on Into Music now. I had this curious experience as I was thinking about our conversation and preparing, because I was reading this book on, it was an oral history on the on Lollapalooza, when Lollapalooza was a tour as opposed to like a stationary event. And it was this moment in the 90s where there were these bands with keyboards that were making heavy music, because you would think about heavy music being guitar oriented before that. And so listening to this album, there was like a, almost like a flashback with that, because I'm like, oh, there's something connected with that music.
Yeah. I think for us, I think when people listen to our music, they first think that there's definitely more than one guitar involved. But no, just the one.
This juxtaposition that you have here with like this kind of aggressive, abrasive sometimes sounds and everything on the album, this is also thematically connected. So when did that kind of come into view as something that you wanted to explore across an album?
I started the band when I was 21 with a very specific goal in mind. And that, I think, we have maybe graduated from the goal, but still kept with the same theme. And the goal was to make guys in the music industry uncomfortable. Because I had been really annoyed with how I was being treated as somebody in local bands in Dublin who was a woman and also happened to play the drums. So when I started the band, I knew thematically what I wanted it to be about. We have moved on as in terms of that being our main goal now, for sure. but I think that it is really important to us to keep those kinds of feminist themes going. And the band is kind of a place for us to put some of our frustration, sometimes through like a humorous lens and sometimes through just like a straight up angry lens.
Tell me a little bit about those days growing up, because this is like a frustration, right, that I hear from a lot of people, where it's like, if you come in and you're a woman and you have your guitar rig, the sound guy is going to tell you everything about it. So
yeah, it was a bit of a weird one. I mean, I was really lucky in that the way I was raised, when I said that I was 9 and I wanted to try playing the drums, no one in my family said, well, that's something that boys do. So I hadn't actually really considered it when I decided that that was the instrument I wanted to explore. And it wasn't until I was in maybe like, I'm trying to think what grade it would be in America. What grade is it when you're like 12, 13?
That's like 6th or 7th grade, yeah.
Yeah. It was about that kind of grade where I started to have boys say things to me. Just sometimes even just like innocently questioning stuff about why I would play that instrument. And it didn't really bother me when it was in the early stages. I was just kind of like, oh, that's funny, because I had never thought about it like that, I guess. And then it was like later on in my teens where it just kept going and kept going. And this is before I had even joined any bands or anything like that. It was kind of just this like constant knee-jerk reaction that I would find people having when I would say, "Oh yeah, I play the drums." And I'm aware that like none of this, I mean, there's way worse things that happen to people in life, by the way, but it was just this ongoing frustration I kind of had. And then I started playing in bands and stuff when I was probably 17, 18, and I had a number of people say to me, "Would I not play more of a feminine instrument?" As someone who wasn't raised viewing instruments as a gendered thing, and also angry enough and knowing enough about like third wave feminism at that point, it really lit a fire, I would say, in me having those conversations. Then on top of that, when I started actually playing these shows, turning up and having people ask me whose girlfriend I am, and I'm thinking, do you think I would be carrying my boyfriend's drums? I'm not that good a partner. Like he can carry those himself. I found it really baffling that that was people's first port of call, I guess. Then it wasn't just from like sound engineers though. I would find other guys in bands to just be awful, like hugely kind of up themselves. Like they would lecture you at any chance they could get. And like Dublin is not a big place, so you end up encountering the same people with the same attitudes over and over and over again. And I guess the more that that was happening, the more emboldened I got. And I had been playing in like kind of a sad music project at the time, which I still do as a solo act now. But I was like, now I really want to make some angry music.
Yeah, I don't blame you. So, were there kind of like other women or other people who were sort of more feminist minded that you could kind of converse with about this?
Honestly, it felt like there were hardly any women my age in the Dublin music scene at the time. I think one of the things I'm most excited about with Irish music in general at the moment is that I think it's completely different to that. Like when I look there now, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, there's so many. There's people of all genders playing all types of music all the time. And that's so encouraging to me. And I'm so jealous of like maybe 18, 19-year-olds right now, because it just must be wonderful to not have it be a token thing when you end up on the same lineup as another woman. Whereas for us, it was like every time we would turn up to play a show, if you had one woman on like a four bill lineup, maybe she's like, I don't know, playing bass or something, you'd be so excited just that there was like another girl there.
This frustration was this kind of energy. So how did you then ultimately find like-minded people to come along with you?
I started the band by saying to my friend Roisin, who used to be the lead singer, that I had shaved her head for charity. She was shaving her head for charity. And I shaved her head and I was like, and now you have to be the singer in my punk band. She doesn't like punk music, but I loved that. I was like, great, that's going to bring something new. And then her college friend Zoe then was a bassist. I picked up Jamie, who is one of our current bassists. She had been a recording engineer around Dublin, and she was actually interested in doing live sound for us. But then I was like, you should just actually be in the band. And then Sean, our token lad and guitarist, I found in a record shop where he was working.
And so this is this kind of, I don't know if this is the right word, but this kind of like ragtag approach to putting together a band. Like,
Oh yeah, no one could play anything. Sorry. Other than me, initially no one could play anything, but that really didn't matter to me. The original lineup was me, Roisin, and our friend Orla, who had never played an instrument before, but I had a bass. So I was like, great, you're the bassist now. And she would play the bass with like a 50-cent coin. And it was great. I thought it was so exciting. I didn't know if we would ever end up actually playing outside of a rehearsal space. That iteration actually never did end up playing outside a rehearsal space. But it was just still really, it was really fun to actually play music with people who had never played music before. When I found Sean in the record shop, I asked him, does he play guitar? And he told me that he had a guitar. And to me, that was like the perfect response because I wanted a guitarist who didn't have preconceived notions about how they should be playing. I basically wanted someone who would just make strange noises. And he stepped up to the plate and he did it. He's actually the only member of the band who has played every single show we've ever had, even though he's the only guy. So he's definitely earned a spot. And then Jamie, I mean, she's really talented. Like she is our producer and everything as well. We did end up moving from a band where nobody could play the instruments other than myself into actually having very talented musicians involved. But I do think that early stage of having just an open-mindedness about how you construct songs, because it's not that you think that you're breaking the rules, it's that you didn't even know there were rules in the first place. I think that's like a really important part of creativity.
Oh, sure. I mean, I think about I have friends who were they're long broken up now, but that were a band here where I live, and the guitar player was classically trained, you know, and he came from a long line of musicians, and so he was in this band who were with people who were very much like you were describing. They were just like, oh, won't that be fun? And he's like, it's good, but sometimes it's like frustrating when you say like, go to G, and they're like, well, which one is that?
There's positives and negatives to it. I mean, you're gonna end up with the most, creative, outside the box thinking you could imagine because they don't know what the box is. But then if you try to plan anything, that's not going to work for you.
So at some point, it kind of starts though taking shape, and you're doing gigs, and this kind of wild idea that you had becomes something that is being presented to people. So how did it go over, for instance, at early gigs?
It actually went over great, which I was not expecting. I found really confusing because in my mind, as like, what was I like, nine, I'm sorry, like 20 at this point, maybe part of me wanted to like go up against some kind of system. Like maybe I was looking for some kind of pushback. And honestly, we didn't really get it. People really liked it, which I found highly confusing because we definitely were not a band who were trying to be like. We were a band that were trying to start some conversations and make people question things on like a very local level. We ended up getting like decent press coverage and playing loads of shows over the space of like a year and a half. And then we went on like a huge hiatus for like 4 years, I'd say, because two of the members moved to New York after they graduated, and we all kind of went our separate ways. And it was something that still lived very much in the back of my mind, what we had done and how I felt like the job wasn't finished. But life happens, and you just kind of get on with things, I guess. I think I didn't even really let myself think that maybe we would get back together because that prospect was kind of too exciting. And then it took a few years for everybody to be back in the same place. And at the end of 2019, I just texted them and was like, would anybody want to play a show? And I wasn't exactly expecting people to say yes. Thought everyone was going to be like, no, we've moved on with our lives. We're not 19 and trying to annoy people that we shouldn't even bother thinking about. Instead, people were like, yeah, that would be a funny thing to do. And then unfortunately, we only got to play one show and then COVID happened.
Wow. So you mentioned this as kind of being a kind of conversation starter, but I would imagine that there are conversations that emerge within the band itself, and maybe conversations you began having with yourself along the way too. Can you talk a little bit about some of those?
I think the conversations that were happening within the band were ones that really energized me. I think I felt really understood by the other members. I felt like we were a team. I felt like it was kind of us against these idiot boys, which looking back, like maybe that sounds a little bit juvenile, but that experience was actually invaluable to me, I think. Obviously, we all mature as time goes on, but having a gang, I think, is actually a really important thing. And I had never been in any way kind of popular in school or anything. I was quite odd. So I was actually usually the one trying to have these conversations and people being like, "What are you talking about?" So for me, it was really, really cool to, yeah, have this like totally bizarre group of people who didn't really know each other beforehand, and have this be like a very unifying factor. We would speak a lot about not just, the stuff that made me initially want to start the band, to do with gendering of instruments and that kind of stuff, but we would speak a lot about like sexual violence and trying to move through the world as a woman and not die. We would speak a lot about queerness and navigating that and what it meant to each of us as individuals, because everybody's experience is different. And it just became like a really nice place for me to get energized about these things. I think it's very easy if you don't have people to talk to about that stuff to think that maybe you're on your own with a lot of those views or a lot of those questions even. But when you're doing something creative, I think it's a really good way to push thoughts you have further along as well, and to kind of develop them more, and also look inside yourself as well. I think it was really good for my own self-development around those topics and those questions.
I have this theory that great music starts with outsiders making music for outsiders.
Yes, I think that's exactly correct. I think I definitely started this band from the position of really feeling like an outsider. And I started this band with people who objectively were outsiders of the music scene. They hadn't been in bands before, they were no part of it. And I think that kind of intersection for people to meet outsiders, even if the outsiders are outsiders in a different way, that there is a common ground there. So for us, it really kind of spurred us on. It becomes like addictive. It becomes like something that you get off on being like that after a little while. You kind of, and that's like for good and bad. I definitely ended up becoming quite, I don't know if naive is the word, because the things actually did end up working out, but I became quite, maybe precocious in how I would approach us running our business as a band. I had like a total blind sense of optimism, because it does sometimes become like an us and them kind of mentality, and you're trying to find the other members of us to listen to your music. Yeah, I think like when COVID hit, rather than just going like, "Oh yeah, well we're not gonna reform the band," we were like, "Right, well we're all back in Ireland. We haven't all been back in Ireland for years. Why don't we use this time to maybe write some music? And why don't we just put out an EP?" And that we had never put out any kind of collection of music before. I think we had put out like one song. Yeah, so for us to just decide, sure, why can't we do this? The world is kind of falling apart anyway, felt like a very normal and natural step, I think. We wrote and recorded it in 3 days, and I already had the vinyl pressing booked in. Because obviously I knew it was going to work. I was like, there's no reason that this couldn't work. So I will already spend thousands of euro booking in a pressing. I already had PR lined up before we wrote any of the songs. I don't know where I got that confidence.
I'm sorry. I love it. Go ahead.
I don't know where. Why did I think that would work out? I don't know. I literally, I met this woman on Twitter who is still our PR person in the UK and Europe. I sent her a tote bag, that one of our tote bags, and I was like, "Hey, I'd love you to do our PR." We didn't have any music. I don't know what I was thinking, but I had her lined up, had the vinyl pressing lined up. I had started a label myself about maybe a year beforehand, so I had decent distribution and all that kind of stuff. And I just thought, well, if we're gonna do something, I'm very much like, if I'm gonna do something, I want to properly do it. So then I booked us a headline tour of the UK. I had no music to send any of the promoters. I don't know what I was thinking, but we did it. I don't know. Usually, if you're gonna we're an Irish band. If you're gonna tour the UK, the first time you do that would be as a support act. And I was like, no. We're just gonna do a headline one. And we sold out our first London show, which only was 150 people, but still, that was crazy. Had my housemate drive us. I think he had the worst time of his life. We still talk about it because we didn't know how to tour. We'd never done anything like this before. We were so out of our depth, but also completely up for it. Yeah, I look back and I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't know why I thought that was going to work, even though it did.
There are things I think in everybody's life. I certainly have them in mine where I'm like, oh, I could do that, but I don't really know anything. I don't know enough about it. When I've read all the books and I've got all the information, then I'll do it. But then there's that other side where it's like, I don't know, when I was 12, I was making fanzines and there was nobody to tell me that I couldn't. I was just like, I had no idea that anybody's gonna read it. But I'm like, this is my fanzine. Here I am.
Yeah, that I kind of long for that feeling now sometimes. I don't know if it's getting older or I work in music otherwise as well, and because of that, I guess I've seen so many things not work out. But then again, people's definition of something working out could be so different. I just had always wanted to be in a band. I always wanted music that I made to be on a vinyl record. And I always, always, always wanted to do a tour. And I was like, I have an email address. I guess we're just going to figure that part out. I mean, it was awful. There were parts of it that were absolutely awful. Horrific. I remember on the very first drive on the tour, it was from Bristol to Glasgow, which is 8 hours, which in the US is not a long time, I understand, but in the UK that's quite a far drive. We had left the accommodation, the van rental and accommodation place in Bristol, and within 5 minutes we had smashed off the wing mirror. We smashed off the wing mirror of another van as well. Looking back, we were like, well, we just have to tape it on, because if we don't keep going now, we're not going to make it to the venue on time for loading. And I still thought it was going to work out.
I mean, here we are. At some point, you not only moved beyond Dublin into London, but now here we are talking about a US release for this record on Merge. So something's going right.
Yes, something is going right. The thing about us is that we will just continue to try, absolutely, regardless of what does work out or what doesn't work out. I mean, there's been so many things that have gone wrong over the years. I definitely don't think we're a band who have been handed things particularly easily. I think we just all have this blind sense of faith, but also work ethic, where once somebody says we can't do something, or once some roadway gets blocked, we just kind of decided, well, we didn't want to do it that way anyway, so actually thank you. Now we're gonna find another way to do it. We come from like such a DIY approach to things. Our team is so incredibly small. Like I managed the band on my own up until like just over a year ago. And now a friend of mine who's incredible, she manages it with me. But like we didn't have a booking agent for ages. I was booking loads of the stuff. Now we have merch involved, but I was just releasing the records. And it's really cool now, even like from having this conversation, to look back and think, I don't have to do it all now anymore. Jamie, our bassist, she still has to do it all because she's our recording engineer, producer, mixer, and mastering engineer. We don't have anybody else in her job yet. But it is such a it's such a DIY thing. Like we do all the artwork ourselves as well. We make all the videos. It's all us. And we feel incredibly lucky that we're now in a position where what we do can sync up with somebody like Merge, and yeah, bring us to places that we just never even thought we would have access to. Like it kind of is so strange to me that I'm even having this conversation with you about this band.
Well, two kind of final things you talked on, and it's evident, of course, in the music, this sense of humor. And so one of my other sort of theories is that bands that stay together and have some success, oftentimes it comes down to a shared sense of humor.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, we've had to laugh our way through so much stuff. Like we used to be a band of five people, we're now a band of three people. You know, we had a huge lineup change. Like a lead singer no longer being in the band is like it's a huge shift, and we really had to look inwards and think, is this a step that we want to take, releasing music now with a new voice, and in our case, new voices because it's both me and Jamie singing, and you really have to have a sense of humor then. Because you don't know if people are going to listen to it and go, oh my God, this is awful. They've destroyed whatever legacy that they had. What I'm so grateful for is that, you know, me, Sean, and Jamie have such a similar sense of humor. When these things go wrong, you just kind of, I know I can rely on them being able to laugh about it. Like our group chat is now called Final Destination 3. Cause it's the three of us. And we're like, no one else can leave. This is us now. We're in this for life.
And then the last thing is, I mean, you talked about being this teenager in Dublin and feeling this pushback and so forth. And now there's probably some kid in Dublin starting off and they're getting pushback about whatever. But they might know your story and be able to look at that and say, okay, well, that's one place to start. You know, this was the thing that when I was a kid and I would feel down about something, you know, teachers or older friends would say, don't worry about it. In 10 years, you're going to be one of the cool kids.
But did you believe them when they said that to you?
Oh, of course not. No.
Because I really didn't.
Oh,
I
no.
really didn't. I was like, you're lying to me to make me feel better, and now I'm just offended that you're lying to me.
Do you have any sort of sense of that? Like some kid who's starting out, like this can be inspirational?
Yeah. The thing about my approach to music, though, in general, which maybe is like not the popular thing to say, but although I think as a band, we're all very united in it. Like we basically make music for ourselves. We do it because we like it. Pretty much end of story. We never started this band thinking anybody would like it. Even though some people like it now, that hasn't really changed. I think that's the thing that has kept us going, even with lineup changes. We're just like, well, we like doing the thing. So even if people think it's awful now, too bad. We're having a good time. I never really see myself as somebody to inspire people to do anything, because at the end of the day, like I am just doing the thing that I wanted to do. I don't think what I'm doing is in any way like selfless. I think I'm just, you know, singing about and drumming about stuff that matters to me. And if that happens to connect with people, well, then that's like such an incredible and wonderful thing. But it is also lovely, you know, I've had a number of people, especially in the last like 2 years, come up to me in Dublin. Like if I'm just in a bar or something like that, and say like, oh, we started a band because we saw your band. And that's a really objectively cool thing to hear. I'm like, get better references because we please don't do what we're doing. But it is an objectively really, really lovely, lovely thing to hear. I feel a lot more maybe comfortable with that than a lot of the time I have people come up to me after shows to tell me how brave I am, and I don't really know what to do with that information. It's not that I don't think that the person means it. I just don't. That's not how I view myself, and it's very strange to view yourself through the lens of somebody else, I think objectively. But I do get a real kick out of like younger, like women or non-binary kids or queer kids who are like, yeah, we saw your band and then thought that we could do something like that in Dublin or in Ireland in general. It's a really, really cool feeling.
I'm Jed Bodwin. You've been listening to a conversation with Constance Keane of the band Mail. And that band's name is spelled M, parentheses, with an H inside of it, A-O-L. The Irish group's new record, Something Soft, is out May 16th via Merge Records. You can learn more about the band at the official Merge Records website and find Mail on social media platforms and Bandcamp as well. Our digital producers are Carly Cooper, Beth Golay, and Hugo Fan. Our theme music is composed and performed by Torin Anderson. You can learn more about this podcast and other programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org and find all the latest programming notes on that website as well. Thanks again for listening. We will see you next time.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.